Okay, this is Chapter 8, and by the way, this is February the 1st, 1994, for any who are listening to this tape. But we're calling this Highlights and Successes, but it's probably to be renamed. Basically, what I'd like to do in this chapter is to just kind of hit some of the things that are little peaks, little pluses in our school program, little things that I think that if somebody came and visited our school and interviewed the teachers and interviewed the students, these things would come out in the interviews, and repetitively they would be mentioned or referred back to as being things at work in our school. And I thought we would just have a chapter where we'd collect these all together and maybe outline in bold print each of these little paragraphs so they could reference back to that if somebody was really trying to implement one of these little programs in their school. I do believe that God uniquely prepares us all our life for our next step, whatever that is. In fact, all of life could be considered a readiness program. Childhood is getting ready for adult. First grade is getting ready for second grade. A freshman in college is getting ready to be a sophomore. Senior in college is getting ready for a career or profession or whatever you want to call it. And all of this life is getting ready for heaven. So we're preparing, but it's not always that we have to wait to really live, wait to really experience the best. Even though life is that way, God intends us that we should have this abundant life, so that there's kind of several things going on at the same time in our experience as we walk with God. One is this conscious awareness that God wants us to establish this vital, living, exciting relationship with Him, where we're interested in growing and discovering, and that He gives us this curiosity to get into His Word and to find out what this relationship means. But that also we are in preparation for the next thing that He has for us. Sometimes an event of the day prepares us for a confrontation that we're going to have that night that we're not aware of. But God has very much in His wisdom set us up in preparation for that point. I was raised in the China Inland Mission. My parents were missionaries with the China Inland Mission. And they were married in China. And I was raised on the mission field. My father was killed in China in the Second World War. And after the war, my family went back, and my mother was assigned to the China Inland Mission School, which is called the Chifu Schools, which is really quite famous in missionary circles. And we still have an alumni association, and there are alumni all over the world, missionaries' kids all over the world, hundreds of them. And the Chifu School has actually been in different places. The Chifu location was its first location, but after the Japanese invasion into northeastern China, it was dislocated into several other places and just maintained its name. I find that the memories I have of my Christian school experience are quite fond, and many times I think I'm trying to, or I would like to recreate a lot of those things that I had in my past and bring it into the here and now. It was a British school system, because most of the people that were on staff and most of the people that were in the administration of the Chifu School from its inception went to school in England, in Cambridge or Oxford or some other place like that. And so we had a very British education. And there were certain things about that I liked. I liked their real academic and scholarly approach to life, that to academics, the discipline that they expected of the students, the note-taking, the fact that we had to do quite a bit of recitation, the type of memory work that is decried today. Well, why bother that? Why put that in your head? You've got better things to do than that. You can always look that up. But they wanted us to be able to decline verbs, and we had Latin. We had 4 years of Latin. We had 4 years of French, we had Chinese, of course we had English, so it was steeped in the classics, and I found myself wanting to kind of recreate that, and I could have probably got away with it if Cookinland Academy was located on the East Coast, because many of the Christian schools are quite preppy and are quite European in flavor, but we're too far west for that, and unfortunately, we find very little interest in Latin as a language and in that kind of a thing here. And so I've tried to make our school a reflection of the values and the ideals of our Christian community, which we serve, and that's always a difficult balance to find. So I find myself always balancing my past experience and the things that I really thought were the quality and the things about that I really benefited from with what I am realistically able to do and able to convince parents that this is the kind of education your child should have. And that's almost a different subject, but that is a balancing act that's very difficult to accomplish. But one thing that I did sense there was this family atmosphere. All of these kids were living away from their parents. This was a boarding school. Their parents were scattered all over China, some of them thousands of miles away. And so this was their family. This was their home. And so I learned from that this wonderful feeling of when I was sitting in a classroom, I was there with my family. Now, even though my mother was on staff, but we had this camaraderie amongst us that was very much a brother and a sister relationship with everybody in the school. The older kids were your bigger brothers and bigger sisters, and vice versa. And that was a very, it gave me a lot of security, and it gave me just a feeling of really belonging and connectedness. And as these people would talk about their backgrounds, and some were from Australia, and some New Zealand, and some South Africa, and from all the countries of the world where they had come to this missionary school, somehow, because we were friends, I was connected to all of that somehow. And this world vision and this this concept of this greater family of God that we have been born into has never left me. And I think we see a little bit of that here at Cook Inlet Academy. I think we see that this feeling of family and belongingness and this brother-sister kind of a relationship is just here in kind of a way that I haven't seen it in any other school. And I think it's because we do try to encourage the building of relationships. It's stressed as a concept of caring for one another, and it's stressed between the teacher and the student itself. A quality, not the student, not the teacher lowering himself to be kind of liked by the student, but having a genuine relationship with the student. And I think as I look back on my Christian school experience, my mother was a single parent because her husband had died during the war. He was killed in the Chinese war with Japan. And I realized that I depended a lot on my school to fill that gap in a very subconscious way. And in some ways, that gap was never met. And I know for me as a young boy, having missed my father, that for me, sexual things were never really explained adequately. And that's always been such a hot button in American society. And I really feel that probably most of our schools are failing our children in having some kind of a healthy, meaningful dialogue on whatever level is appropriate and proper in the family of God in this school atmosphere. I do believe that home is the place for the values to be initiated, and those are the values that should be reinforced. But if any of us can remember, especially I suppose the boys, being a boy myself, how the sexual thoughts and the sexual questions were so overwhelming, it just kind of overwhelmed every aspect of my growing up, that I kind of wish that there had been more answers there. I wish that there was maybe a little more meaningful way that we can approach that in Cook Inlet Academy, but I think the way that is most healthy there, and that we are meeting the needs of our kids in that way, since we do serve many single parents, and many single parents are hoping that a school like this will end up in a more rounded experience for their child. that rather than allowing sex to be a hot button, a hot issue, to actually bring it to bring it into the level of a healthy dialogue where we're not interested in talking about the erotic side of it, but basically the responsibilities of it, the consequences of it, the responsible handling of this gift that God has given us, and do it in a way so that hopefully the kids can leave with a healthier respect and an outlook on their sexuality than they would if they had not been in this school. That's a very difficult bill to follow. And I think that we can miss our mark of meeting our kids' needs for sexual dialogue by overemphasizing it, by having a class on sex education, and then everybody's all excited, and what are you going to teach, and who's going to teach it, and what's the curriculum, rather than just take it on as it comes basis. And I seldom initiate the dialogue on sex, but it's before us in the newspapers, it's before us on a day-to-day basis as we just do current events, as we discuss this and that, as we just study history. We're aware of many things that need to be approached. It was John the Baptist that approached King Herod about his illicit relationship with his brother's wife. All of these things give us an opportunity for the Christian mind to be expressed in that situation. You can either overreact to it, or you can take it as a very healthy next step, as so that it's something that doesn't even fall into the category where you allow Satan to use it as a tool against these kids. But that's been a difficult thing, and I think largely we do have a healthy dialogue going on in our school in this area. But I think it's something that has to be monitored very carefully, that it is done in a way that honors the parental values, the homes. It doesn't violate what parents expect you to do, that you're not circumventing, because sex education is not part of our so-called curriculum. It's not there. And yet, probably some aspect of it is expressed almost every day in some way in the classroom, because of the impact that sexuality has on our culture today. It's in our media, our advertising, it's all around us. And so I think it's imperative that a Christian school have a healthy philosophy as to how they are going to transfer the heritage of the Christian philosophy of sex to their children without violating the privacy of the home, the rights of the parents to give the basic instruction. And I find today that that's usually not the issue. The basic instruction, the birds and the bees thing, was something for my generation. It's not for this generation. They stumble into that way too early in today's society. But then how to handle that information is the issue. So that was missing for me, really sorely missing. And I think I regret that today. And I think a meaningful dialogue that could have been established back then would have helped a lot of us boys. And I think anybody who is trying to establish a Christian school cannot fail to address how you are going to meet the needs of the kids in this area and do it in a way that is not offensive, that is godly, and that it is being done as if Christ were present, which he certainly is. So I would say my first experience with a Christian school was quite positive. It was the one I experienced personally. The second experience I had with a Christian school was coming back then to America and going to college and seeing a lot of the academies that were kind of either offshoots of the college itself or the Christian schools that were established in these areas. Seattle had King's Gardens and a lot along the East Coast, but some in the Midwest. And I had the idea of a real pressure cooker effect, that somehow these were a bunch of rebellious kids. They were missionaries' kids, they were preachers' kids, and they were elders' kids and kids that were from families that were trying to preserve their reputation or preserve their heritage, and they were putting in this kind of a reformatory. And the stories we would hear about these kids, their drunken orgies on the weekends and just kind of disasters, and I'm sure this was not necessarily typical. But a lot of the feedback I got was these kids didn't want to be there, and it wasn't hugely successful. Maybe for some it was, but for the ones I heard about, it wasn't. And so when I was first asked to have a part in this school, I was reluctant, because all I could think about was the kinds of Christian schools that I'd been most recently involved with. But as I prayed about it, it seemed that the Lord clearly helped me to think of two things initially, and then some have come out since then. But before the school ever opened, the Lord helped me to see two things that were going to help me to get a handle on this school that was being started from scratch. I was going to have 5 grades, all in one room, about 30 kids, and most of the older ones weren't too excited about it, but were kind of reluctantly willing to go along because their parents were insistent that something like this be done for their kid. And the reason that this kind of surprises me is that I don't know where these ideas came from. I don't know of a school that was necessarily doing this, but one was to write a weekly assignment, which I ended up calling a weekly devotional, about 150 word minimum, where the child would share with me something of his life, something of what was going on in his life, something that I wouldn't know about him or her unless they wrote it down on paper. And of course, initially, this is something that the child wonders what you really want and what's going to be accomplished by this. But actually, through this weekly dialogue, and it does end up being a dialogue because I usually end up writing a few comments on the end of each one of these and handing them back, we get to know each other. And this child begins to see, here's a teacher that wants to know about me. And at first he's just going to tell me that he went snow machining or he went skiing, and he's just going to be very superficial in his communication with me. But then by my comments and by some of the things I say in class, he's encouraged to go to a deeper level and realize that here is an adult that really is trying to help him grow, trying to help him to discover who God made him or her to be. And so they start to talk about some of the things they're struggling with, some of their dreams, some of their fears. And as they see you dialogue with them on that, and the way you encourage them, and that's very important, but all of a sudden this becomes an important experience in the life of the child. And the reason I wanted this is because all of these kids were unknown to me. I had no idea where they were coming from. And I wasn't going to have the chance to just keep a running dialogue personally going with each one of them. I was their teacher. And yet I didn't want to see them as just a class, as a group of kids. I wanted to know them individually. I wanted to help them individually. And I wanted to be specific in some of the suggestions and the encouragements I had for them. So I was literally surprised. I was overwhelmed at the value that this assignment had in our school. Because I think if a kid does come into a school with kind of a negative attitude, and a lot of that is, you know, I don't want to get to know you, and I'm not going to let you get to know me. And so that's a given. Now, what's this book you want me to read? And what's this business over here you want me to learn this stuff? So it's kind of way out here. It's kind of third-party stuff. And so subtly what you're doing is you're breaking down all these barriers. You're joining the same team. You're becoming mentor and student, or maybe even brother and sister, brother and brother, depending on just how that relationship develops. But in other words, there is a melting of the barriers until pretty soon they begin to see you on the same side of life as them, sharing with them in their experiences, walking in their shoes, understanding when they complain, whatever, that you are there to hear them out and to never never condemn the fact that they gave voice to something that they wanted to say. I don't think I could ever express. I would say that if that alone was the only pay I got from Christian school education, that would be enough. Because there is no doubt that that is my greatest pay every week. Doubtless. To have somebody that trusts you enough with something that they care about to share it with you. And of course, it's held in absolute confidence, and they know that. And so they grow and discover what a trusting relationship can really be and how they can benefit from that. Now the other side of that coin is that there's two grades on this, and the reason I go into detail here is somebody may want to institute this in their school. It's also a creative writing assignment. Creative writing is such an important skill to develop because communication is at the heart of developing any relationship, and it's at the heart of reaching out to a lost world that's in need of a message. If we have not learned how to creatively communicate and to be ourselves and to be expressive, we're not going to be effective in so much of what we really want to do and what most of us are able to do. And so at Cookinland Academy, I can say that kids who have been in our school, at least in the high school or in the junior high from the last 6 years of their school, they've had a creative writing assignment every week, every year they've been in school. And it's been evaluated not only on the content, that's one of the grades, but then on the grammar and the composition. So they get two grades, like an A/C. The Bible portion of it is the A, the slash C is the grammar, the spelling, the way the paragraphs were developed. Now, there's a lot of people that say, you know, and it's the thinking of the whole language and the whole approach to language today is, well, you shouldn't stifle a kid by grading his grammar if you really want him to communicate with you. And what I say that until a child develops the level of competence in the language communication skills that he wants, then his first write should be a rough draft, and he should be addressing content, sharing from his heart and saying what he wants to. Now, once he's got that down on paper, then he should be his own best critic, pick up that document, rewrite it, and pay attention then to spelling and grammar. And for many people, it's hard to pay attention to both at the same time. But this whole business of rewriting and being our best critic is something that's lost in our educational system today. Everybody else is supposed to evaluate you. You're not supposed to learn to evaluate yourself, catch your own mistakes, learn how to be self-directive, self-improving, so to speak. And this one little assignment does so much that you could almost receive an education in many of the things that are important in life with this one assignment alone. So the devotional assignment was absolutely a gift to our school. And it has given me a relationship with a host of students and alumni that I know I never would have had if that had never been an assignment. Because there is no way in the busyness of our days that we could have had any meaningful dialogue. This way I have meaningful dialogue with absolutely every student and nobody is excluded. So you don't have to be noisy and boisterous to get my attention. You just have to write me a nice composition and you've got my attention. And you know I'm going to read it in the privacy and the quiet of my study. And while I'm reading that, I'm focusing on that kid. He knows that. And my comments at the end are going to show him that he has got my attention, 100% of it. The second gift that the Lord gave, because I don't really take credit for this, and this is a simple thing and many schools might do it, but it's the weekly report card. This was an attempt to enlist parents and make them partners with me in this process, because as I saw, as I was envisioning, there was almost panic the few days just before the school opened. And I was thinking, you know, this is really going to happen. These parents really are going to dump their kids off in the basement of this church is where we were. And I'm the only one there. There's not going to be any other adult. And we're going to have school. And I found myself panicking. And I thought, you know, I need help. Now, I had taught for 6 years prior to coming to this area in rural Alaska, where it was real difficult families to be 100% supportive of what you were doing, because it wasn't part of their heritage and their culture. And I found that you almost had to institute a value system within the school to inculcate in the minds of these Eskimos and Aleuts that I had in my classroom, and Indians, that education was important, that they were going to have a greater opportunity in life, and they were going to experience a greater portion of their potential if they could really apply themselves and discover that they could develop their mental abilities, they could develop all of their abilities in such a way through training and through discipline, so that they could actually make those talents and those abilities work for them in their own best interest as they grew up to be adults. Some of the parents spoke so little English that it would have been nigh to impossible to communicate my philosophy with them. And in that way, God helped me to see the importance of somehow having at least some measure of success when I was operating, you might say, almost in a vacuum, almost within a society that really may or may not have been aware completely of what I was trying to do to really help their children. So I felt I could do it if I had to, but now when I came against these white American kids, they weren't nearly as well behaved as the native kids of Alaska. They were brass, they were sassy, they talked back. I had never had a child talk back to me in rural Alaska, never once, never even think of it, I don't think. And I don't know if that experience was unique to the area I was in, but the panic that I felt that I needed to enlist the help of some people. And those people obviously were their moms and dads. And so I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to let you know every week how they do. And I'm going to give this report card to you, and I want you to follow up. So we developed the idea of the weekly report card. Not only were we going to grade the academic work for the week, but we were going to grade the behavior and attitude of each child. So this report card was going to list the week number, was going to list the student's name, was going to list all their subjects they were taking, the academic grade that they had gotten for the week, and it was going to give them a behavior and attitude grade. And it was going to be cumulative. In other words, that week's report card was going to show while the next and the next. And so if there was unfinished work, the parent could see that the grade had still not been changed and go back and make sure that the work had been made up. So we were going to form a team, mom and dad and the school, and work together to try to encourage that child to submit himself to the discipline of that school. I think that most parents of this school would testify to the fact that this is an important aspect of our program here at this school. This keeps them informed and keeps them in touch. They know what's going on. It's one thing when Johnny comes home to say, well, how did it go today? Oh, great. You got all your work done? Yep. Any problems? No. And this gets the teacher a chance to say on every Friday, the teacher says, well, this is the way it went as I saw it. And it develops an honesty and it develops a flow of communication that I think has been just very central in what we're doing here. Another thing that that has done is it's almost placed more burden on many parents than they had first anticipated. Because many parents think, well, when I'm paying my tuition, that should pay for you to educate my child. It's a little bit like a person hiring a tutor to come into their home, and when I am paying a tutor to come in and help my kid get through algebra, I don't expect that my load is going to increase as a parent. I'm paying the tutor to do that. So that if you have that mentality, when you pay for an education at Cookingland Academy, then you're paying for a teacher to educate your child. Now, I don't like it when my load increases as a result of that. But actually what happens is that the parent realizes, hopefully this is the plan, this is the philosophy, that their degree of involvement initially and their degree of willingness to be involved in the education of their child initially was not enough. There was a lack there. And it's the fact that no Christian parent can be absolved of their responsibility of educating their child. And so really, a Christian mother and father answer to God for the way their child is educated, not the school. They have to be on top of that. It's their responsibility. And so they enlist all the help they can get to help them educate their child. But actually, the responsibility is mothers and fathers. I think that's the way I see Scripture. The exhortation is to parents to teach their children. That's what Deuteronomy 6 says. And so if we understand that that's a scriptural principle, then there's no Christian way that we can hand over that responsibility to anybody else. Those children were born to us. They're God's gift to us, and we are responsible. So really what we're doing then as a Christian school is we're subtly reminding a parent by handing this report card, now, your job isn't over. Here's the report. How can you fit in your parental responsibilities to sit down, counsel with your child, discuss these grades, set goals, set minimums, whatever, and ensure that the process has the kind of reinforcement it needs from home. Some parents don't like that initially because they have allowed themselves to get quite lazy. That might not be a word we want to use, but quite relaxed or delinquent or whatever word we want to choose in this parenting process. And this is characteristic of our society today. And this malaise has touched even us as Christians. And so when something comes along to sharpen us or remind us of what our responsibilities are, initially we don't like it. I think after we think about it twice, we say, well, this is the way it ought to be. And we submit to it because we understand, yes, I am this child's parent, and this is my responsibility. And I realize the lion's share of the load is being done by those at school, but I am a key element in this process. This child has a connectedness to me as his dad and as his mom that he won't have with any other humans on earth, because I am his biological mother and father, or adoptive mother and father, whichever way it is. And they know that you have that unique relationship. And one of the ways that you are going to have a level of integrity and believability with this child is to do your duty as God has clearly laid it out for you in Scripture. And when we're doing that, we get the respect from our kids that God ensures that we will get. So we find parents developing parenting skills almost in spite of themselves. Through our PTFs, through a lot of our conferencing, they find themselves better parents as a result of joining Cook Inlet Academy. Another way we keep weekly contact with our families is through our weekly newspaper. We've done this since the first day of school. The school first opened its doors, and the family was larger than just one church home. There was many churches and many diverse people in this little first one-room classroom. And I realized that we just couldn't keep holding meetings every week and having all the parents together. So it was just a one-page flyer, and then it grew and grew and got to be a document that the kids put out as far as their language assignment. And so now for 21 years, we've had a weekly newspaper. And there's not many schools that do it every week. Some do a bigger one once a month. But basically, it's an instrument that we keep the communication flowing home. And I think that's very important, to give the parents ownership into the school, let them know what's going on. Something that we started from the first day of school was a daily cleanup of our school. It takes 5 minutes. We dismiss school 5 minutes early. Everybody has an individual assignment, different from anybody else's. Clean the board, dump the trash, pick up the papers in the hall, clean up the bathrooms, the mirror in the bathroom, the floor in the bathroom, dump the trash in the bathroom. Everybody has a specific job. They go and do their job, and in 2 or 3 minutes, the school is, the basic grubbiness of the school is taken care of. It won't look polished as if a professional had done it, but they learn a very important life lesson. Now, we've actually had parents come in and say, well, you know, I don't really know if I want my child responsible for the janitorial service of the school. Isn't that what I'm paying for? No, you pay tuition, and we actually have no paid janitor. And I don't know if there's a school in America today that's been there for 21 years and never had a paid janitor, but we're one. And one of the reasons is because we believe that the children need to learn that just a few minutes a day can make all the difference in the world, and they need to learn to clean up their own mess. That's a real life skill. Think of how many parents have been trying to get their kid to just be responsible for their own room or their own drawers or their own bed or whatever. We're constantly working at kids to do that, and I think it's healthy for it to be a part of a school day that a few minutes be dedicated to clean up. And of course it saves money for the parents. If we're trying to keep costs low and realistic, something that parents can afford, parents should understand that when you're doing something to keep the cost down. Another program that has been quite successful is our discipleship program. We do that with our juniors and seniors. They are paired up, the upperclassmen girls with a lady, upperclassmen boys with a man, one morning a week. We do it Tuesday morning, 8:30 to 9:30, which is our Bible period, and they're paired off with an adult. This has been a marvelous thing, not only for our students, but for the adults, because they learn to relate with someone other than their peers. And as you know, just this peer consciousness, this herd instinct that can overtake children at this age can almost become a cancer, a disease, can be very detrimental. And we need to do something that's always breaking down that and keeping the lines of connection with their adult world, because this is not characteristic. Most families in the world live in extended families. Everybody from newborns to grandpas are under the same roof. Teens today in our society go around in huge herds, you know, part of the generation gap that we hear people talk about in our society today is our own fault. We have allowed our children to drift away from us, and we don't treat them as adults. We plan activities just for them like a little mob, and we move them around. They're a little group in the church, and they're a little group at school, and they're a little group. There's this little herd that goes through life, and the adults are here, and you know, the little kids are below them, and they don't really try to build these bridges or these relationships, and we don't try either. So to have a program at your school, first of all, the devotions, which we said before, where they develop a meaningful relationship with their teacher, and second of all, a discipleship program, where they start to relate to the adult world. These are kids who are juniors and seniors. They're about to step out into this world as adults, and they need to know that there's somebody other than their own parents that actually do care for them. And these are youth pastors. These are we choose them on the basis of the fact that the family approves, the school approves, the child approves, and the child initiates the contact and says, "Mrs. Jones, will you disciple me?" So we start off from the very first step that it is the request of the student. It's not something that's forced on them. It's not somebody that says, "Okay, come over here, I'm going to disciple you." It's the other way around. And really, that's the only way discipleship can work. We have to be willing. Discipleship is a heart in submission, in a learning mode, in a growing mode, where they're going to listen to godly counsel and learn from example and by dialogue with another Christian who cares about them. So this has been a wonderful thing, and we have a rather informal program. We ask that the disciplers, the mentors, try to have at least these three things going on. One is dialogue. Find out what the student's week is like, the joys and the sorrows of it. A study time when they address scripture and they are confronted with the claims of Christ in one way or another, and then a time for prayer. And if you're doing those three things, meaningful dialogue, addressing scripture, looking at what God says about life, either about the issues that were just discussed or follow a little study guide, it really doesn't make any difference as long as you're interacting with the Word of God, and then learning to pray together and committing to each other. And by the way, this is two ways. It's not just the student sharing his life. The adult does the same thing through. He talks about his week or her week and treats the young adult like an adult. And like, this isn't a one-way street, it's a two-way street. This is how it works. And the more that they see these adult Christians as people that have disappointments and discouragements and joys and failures, then I think they get a much more realistic view of what life is really like. One interesting aspect of this is that many parents have asked to disciple their own kids, and many kids have responded to that. And that's been a wonderful result, because as this program is explained, we've had mothers and fathers, but I think maybe more so mothers, because fathers often work, think, man, I'd give anything for an uninterrupted hour with my child, or we can just talk and develop a relationship. I don't want somebody else to do with my child what I would give anything to do myself. And of course, they always have first dibs, and that's wonderful when that happens. But there are some times when mutually they think it would be better if another adult was in on it, and that's appropriate too. But there's been some wonderful times, and I have a sheet here that I keep on file, and we may want to use it as appendix of comments of adults and students, both sides, on feedback that they have given as they've evaluated their year, the ways that they've grown, and the things that they have learned and appreciated about this whole thing that they never would have really anticipated when the year began. Another thing we do that I think gets our year off to a good start, and I'm talking about the high school students now, is we have a high school retreat where we leave as an entire student body for several days, and we'll go into some Christian campground somewhere. And the student body is always a little different mix every year. The seniors are gone. That always leaves a hole. You got a new bunch of freshmen, and they're kind of squirrely and immature, everybody thinks, you know. I'm referring to the other students. And yet we're going to have to work as a team. We're going to have to learn to live together and love each other. And I suppose some schools are so big that you couldn't do this, and it wouldn't be practical to do it all together. And maybe you could just have a junior-senior or a senior retreat. But some way, get the students apart at the beginning of the year, have a time of devotions, have a time of outdoor education, do some exerting mountain climbing or something together where they're in some challenging situations together. We've had rock climbing where they've had to depend very much, their life hanging literally in the balance as they were suspended by just one rope, and learning a lot about trust and a lot about how important an otherwise insignificant other can be in their life. Another teen that they would probably never ever look at or maybe ever want to talk to all year, they can be thrown into some kind of an informal but yet maybe an intense encounter that would open their eyes to, that would be a neat person to get to know. That's a neat person. And so all of a sudden we see the beginnings of new relationships and new trust built as our student body gets to meet each other. So this has been very strengthening, and we try to do it as soon as we can. It's almost like every day of school that we have before this is lost, because everybody's a little shy, they really don't know each other, they're being cutesy, and a few of the kids that really know each other, they're really into their group already way too fast. The new student that doesn't know anybody doesn't have anything that's throwing him in socially with the group, and so the faster you can get this behind you, the better. In fact, if it looks like it's going to be 3 or 4 weeks, we will have a social right at the beginning anyway, maybe a water skiing party out at a lake or something, to start to get this family feeling going amongst the high school students. The outreach aspect of our school has gone through many phases. In the beginning of our school, while it was quite young, we spent a lot of our time visiting other high schools, their biology classes particularly, and getting a dialogue going on creation. And those were just wonderful times, and was rather surprised at the openness of the public schools to have a bunch of students come in with some charts, some presentations, and willingness to field questions, let them know far enough in advance where they could even get their Yeah, the teachers of both classes stay out of it, I stay out of it, they stay out of it, and the kids, based on how well they've been trained and how much they've learned, just kind of dialogue together in a very respectful way, not an argumentative way. But that made a lot of impact. Lately, our thrust has really been in missions, and being such a small school with only about 30 high school students, we just can't get spread too thinly. We just, there's not enough of us. And as you know, if you have a student body of about 30, and you know you're going to have a certain percentage of them that are going to be kind of shy and basically non-participants, they feel a little more comfortable kind of watching. And you're not going to have a very large group, and if you get involved in too many programs, and to keep the family feeling, it's worked for us as a small school, and other small school people reading this will understand this, to narrow down our options and do what we do well and do it together so that it unites us rather than divides us. We play boys and girls basketball. Almost everybody in high school is involved in that. And certainly that's true of our retreat. But outreach now is a missions outreach. And we encourage our students to go to Mexicali, which is a outreach into Mexico, a trip every year. And then we have about 4 student exchanges a year with Russia. And this is our second year we're into this program. And this has just done wonders in opening our students' understanding to the needs of the world, to what missions are all about, to what God's call upon every believer to go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. It keeps it from being something that, oh, I'll do that when I'm older. We have found ourselves involved in a missionary activity that actually only teenagers can do. There's no way in the world any adult could do what our teens are doing, because we are reaching into Russia, reaching teenagers in their school setting, in their sports centers, in their music centers, and with teens, mixing with teens, interacting on a level that teenagers around the world seem to connect on, that adults just cannot do. And our adults go along to supervise and to direct the activities and to try to encourage that the training we've had our kids do gets fulfilled. But it's mind-boggling to see how God is using our teens in missions today. We have 4 exchange students from Russia here today as one indication of what can happen when you go into a town, small little Far East Russian community that would have never have been reached. And now 4 of them are under the sound of the gospel every day, and 5 days a week, 6 hours a day, they're in a Christian school. And we feel very privileged to have them here. And we sponsored their trip here. We're sponsoring them here. And this is our way of following up our outreach into Russia. We have 1 student, and there may be more, that are actually doing long-term missions. And we now have a program for seniors who have completed the bulk of their requirements for graduation to spend their senior year abroad. And this is kind of an experimental year, but it's something that all of our student body is following very closely. Just the other day we had our commissioning service and a goodbye party for Melissa as we sent her off to Mexico, and she had come back from an almost 3-week stint in Russia. So she has, of course, grown a lot through that. She shares through that. She keeps a daily log. She gives an account to our students. There's interaction here. And we as a student body are feeding off of her vision, her enthusiasm, and the lessons that God is teaching her, and making a lot of our kids think twice, more than once, about God's call on their life, God's claim on their life. And we trust it will result in many people responding in a positive way in these days to go into the harvest fields. Another thing that's been successful is we used to just have a jogathon in the fall to raise money for our athletic program. It's really our one big student fundraiser where the students are involved. And we found out that adults were a little reluctant to sponsor high school, big old high school kids, for just running around a circle. And we developed a program, and it's not unique with us, but going out into the community and participating in hospitals, in senior citizen centers, in the Salvation Army, in Christian campgrounds, and different things like that. And our 7th through 12th graders give a whole day as a donation to these organizations and serve in the community and find out a little bit about a lot of these nonprofit service arms that serve our community. And in so doing, their sponsors sponsor that day in the community, which is a very meaningful experience for the student and for the community, and raises money for their sporting program. And we have a commendation from our governor hanging on the wall of our school, which not only when he heard about it, but actually came to our school to investigate and find out what was going on here, wrote us a personal commendation. And we do feel it's a much more positive way that we can impact the community and be a lighthouse, as we believe God wants us to be salt and light. Another success is the volunteer program we've recently developed among parents that actually is initiated by a two-level participation as a parent in our school. The associate member pays the tuition rate that is posted in our literature. A discount is offered to a member who can give about 10 hours a month to the school as a donation. And we'll meet the needs of the school in some way, providing transportation for field trips, helping with recesses, grading papers, helping with facilities, building, painting, whatever. And this has been a wonderful program. We're only into our second year. It's gone 100% better than the first year, but we do look for 100% improvement in the following year. So I think we're learning as we go through that, and maybe the day will come when we will have a plan of action on there that we feel really happy about. But I think we're in the right direction, going in the right direction. And one of the things I like is the fact that these kids get used to seeing their moms and dads around them all day long. Somebody's mom and dad. And it's in a very positive way. And this way it gives the parents a real heart for what the school is doing. And a heart for these children. And they really begin to see it more than just going out and buying a product, buying education. They start to own it even that much further. And so the total quality of the product that we are offering our families is improved because of this volunteer program. And of course, the fact that we can offer that quality product at a lower price because of the volunteer hours, we get between 500 and 800 donated hours a month. And that's a significant donation in a school's program. I just want to mention a couple other things before we wrap up this chapter. Faculty devotions. I can't imagine running a Christian school without getting the faculty together every morning. But this can be a marvelous time of meeting with God, of spreading out before Him the needs of the school. The way we do it in our school, a different faculty member, we keep a sequence, does it every week, is responsible for leading the devotional and the prayer time, the prayer requests. We all pray every morning. And this has done a lot to weld us together as a faculty and to keep our dialogue flowing. Not just our dialogue about everyday events in school and books and curriculum, but our dialogue that focuses on the spiritual aspect and the spiritual mission of this school, which is our mission and purpose statement. And so we have a 20-minute meeting every day in our school with our faculty members that focuses on the spiritual mission of this school. And we meet with the Lord and we refocus and we remind ourselves that this is His school. And we make ourselves consciously available to Him to bless our children, His children, through us. And then lastly, I'd like to mention the school day of prayer. Most schools have in-service days, and they take care of the kind of not only in-service teacher training that they want to see accomplished, but the kinds of things that they want to dedicate their school to doing. They want to make sure that time is made available for that. This year we have set aside an in-service day that is just for long-range planning, when the parents that can come, the teachers and the staff, of course, are asked to be here, the board members, we get together and we try to look down the road in the future and see what God is telling us about the directions that we need to take. We also have a day of prayer near the beginning of the school year where the faculty prays together all morning, and then we have an open house prayer in the afternoon, and each teacher sponsors a prayer session in their classroom for students and for parents in their class. And we've taken time to develop a prayer list, a prayer request list, that is meaningful in each of these situations. And I really think it's helped to remind us, if nothing else, of the source of our strength and what we're all about as a school. But it also reminds us that we're in a spiritual warfare, and it's very easy to be a casualty on the battleground. And previous chapters have referred to the fact that this is a spiritual warfare. And if it is, we're going to have to take significant, premeditated steps, planned steps, plans of action, strategies, there's the word I'm looking for, as you're typing around. Okay. We're going to have to develop a specific strategy, not only for engaging ourselves in this spiritual battle, but for making sure that we know that this is the Lord's battle, only He can win it, and that there is a dimension to the process that is going on here at this school that's beyond the academics, it's beyond the physical, it's a spiritual dimension, it's very significant. And mostly it's invisible, and it's very easy to dismiss something that is invisible. And yet what this day of prayer does is it brings what we're all about and what the kingdom of God is all about into sharp focus, and it helps us to be committed as a faculty, as in a school, to fulfill God's plan for this school for that year.